Welcome to today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me is my colleague, Peter Flaherty. Millie is with us and asleep. We'll see how that goes. Like I said last week, the podcast is planned around her sleep schedule. So we'll see what we get this week. We're coming off of an outstanding weekend of college baseball. It was a really exciting weekend all around. A very surprising weekend, I would say, Peter. It was like sweeps week everywhere. There was a lot of stuff that really shook up the postseason race, some conference title races. So we're going to get into a lot of that. We're going to get into some of what to expect in the week ahead. That is highlighted by Duke going to Virginia. Yes, we're talking about Duke, and we'll get deep into the Blue Devils, who are one of the hottest teams in the country. We've got Vanderbilt taking on Kentucky. Out west, Arizona State and Oregon. And first place is on the line in the Big Ten with Maryland visiting Indiana. So a lot to get to on this week's edition, Peter. Last weekend, there were sweeps all over the place. Five of the SEC's seven series were sweeps. Four in the ACC, three in the Big 12. Army-Navy was even a sweep. I mean, it was... I don't have data to support this, but it feels like there just have been more sweeps this year than ever before in college baseball, and never was that more on display than last weekend.
Well, not only that, but we had closed off air, I guess. We had talked about how the weekend prior to last was hard in terms of making the top 25, and that there was probably no way that this past weekend could make it any more difficult, and it probably made it 10 times more difficult with all the sweeps going on. And we were kind of talking how we were getting some clarity on some teams, and there was a group that was separating itself from the top, which I still think remains true for the most part. While some teams like Arkansas and Florida, they had down weekends. That doesn't totally change my thinking on them as a club going forward, but no, it was a crazy weekend across the country. Obviously, teams like Duke surging into our rankings. And the more I watch that Duke team, the more I like them, which we'll get into later, I'm sure. But Boston College had a really big bounce back weekend, which was something they needed. And speaking of really needing bounce back weekends, something we'll also get into was Tennessee sweeping Vanderbilt, which I think may have been the most... not quite sure of the adjective, I guess, needed, surprising, important, maybe, result of the weekend in terms of turning a season around. But as college baseball seems to do week in and week out, there are always some surprises. So I think that's what makes it so great. And while this weekend there might not be the star-studded slate as we've seen in past weeks, we've been kind of spoiled where how the season's shaken out. We've had blockbuster series each weekend. We might not have that this weekend, but I'm sure that inevitably there's going to be someone that takes a series from someone that we're sitting here talking about next week. So I'm excited to break it all down.
No doubt about that. You know, let's start in the SEC as we so often do. The SEC slate this coming weekend is good, not great, I would say, but last weekend's was great. And it started with South Carolina and Florida and Arkansas and Georgia even on Thursday night. South Carolina and Florida got a lot of attention going into it for obvious reasons, you know, top five, top 10 matchup. And South Carolina really needed something they needed to show something. They had home field advantage. They were coming off of a tough series loss at Vanderbilt. And now they had an opportunity to bounce back at Founders Park, where, as we've said so often, they are just really difficult to beat. And they got it. They got absolutely everything they needed, sweeping away Florida. South Carolina moves into, with all of the results of the weekend, South Carolina finished the weekend in first place in the SEC East. We move them up to number two in the top 25 in the latest Field of 64 projections. South Carolina had consistently been outside the top eight seeds for me, I think, for like the last month. I completely reversed that. They're now the number three overall seed. They're number one in RPI. This is a team that is quite good. And they went out and they really controlled the series against Florida the whole way. I mean, they they did everything you would want to see from them. Unlike the previous 2 weeks where they had won the first game of the series against LSU and against Vanderbilt, but then been unable to finish, they won the first game against Florida. They run ruled Florida on Thursday night, and then they just kept going. South Carolina pitched at a really high level. Florida had come into the weekend averaging 9.5 runs per game. They scored 10 runs on the weekend. And I think to me, that was the most interesting or surprising or just biggest part of that weekend was South Carolina showing up the way that they did on the mound, because we had said, we think there are going to be a lot of runs in this series. If you like home runs, this is a great series for you. Like, this will be an offensive series. And it wasn't like a series of pitching duels, but South Carolina really took away that Florida offense and was able to, they didn't have to go out and score 12 runs a game to beat Florida. They were able to contain Florida. Maybe not, they didn't shut them out, they didn't stop it completely, but they really contained Florida in a way that we haven't seen so far this season. And for me, that was the loudest part of the weekend for the Gamecocks.
I agree. And I expected, like you, coming into this weekend to see a bunch of 8-6, 10-8 high scoring ball games with 4-6 pitchers being used on whatever side it might be. But South Carolina got through the series only using 8 arms. And the way that they came out, and I mean, they commanded the series from really the end of the top of the first on Friday onward, because Florida, they struck first, looked like Will Sanders may have been on the ropes, but he comes back out and turns out he has really good stuff. And I was mainly impressed with his breaking ball that he got a bunch of swing and miss on, and particularly that pitch neutralized Caglione. So I'm curious to see other pitchers with quality breaking balls, how they might attack Caglione. We'll see. But no, they came out and proved that, I think for now, that they're the better club. And offensively, they might not even have the names or star power that Florida does, but Ethan Petrie continues to be outstanding. He rakes against no matter the talent level of pitching. We saw it against Paul Skeens. Now we saw it against Brandon Sproat with him hitting his 20th home run of the year. And then I'm most impressed, and you can see it while they play, is the team chemistry that they have. And every guy is pulling the rope. I think the perfect example of that, at least on Friday, was, or I guess Thursday, was Michael Braswell with the 3-for-3, 3-double game. I think he really sparked the offense. He got everyone going. It's clear to see that everyone's pulling for each other. And I was just really blown away by the Gamecocks. And it's clear that they have something going that not a lot of people can replicate in the country, no matter how well they start playing. And Chris Veach has emerged as a really solid option in the back end of that bullpen. He's got an outstanding changeup. The mound presence is there. They're going to get Noah Hall back into that rotation, which takes the load off of someone like Matthew Becker, and you can put him in more of a swing roll down the road like Eli Jones. So when talking about and looking at this Gamecocks team, it's hard to poke a hole in it, and they are going to be, at least on my short list, for a potential national champion. Now, there's still a lot of season left to be played, and it's weird to say with only, I don't know, 3.5 weeks left in the regular season, but that weekend kind of fully sold me on South Carolina. And granted, if there are any South Carolina fans listening to this, you're probably being like, why weren't you sold after 20 games? And maybe I was late to the party, but after last weekend, I'm fully all in on them.
South Carolina is second nationally in ERA behind only Wake Forest. And this is a team that a year ago was 11th in the SEC in ERA. They've knocked like more than two full runs off of their ERA. Now, of course, we have to finish the season to make that an apples to apples comparison. But regardless, the jump that they've made on the mound, I know they dealt with some injuries last year. But it's not just about being healthier this year. They have made a real jump. And I think that is the primary reason why they are so much better this year. You can point to any number of things, like adding Ethan Petrie obviously has been hugely significant and their offense has been humming right along. But just the jump that they've made to me is why I would agree with you, Peter, that they are a true national championship contender, why they're a team that's at the top of the East that, you know, split a series with LSU. We'll never know how that series might have ended, but this is why they're positioned to do everything. And I mean, here's the thing right now. They are, you know, I said that I moved them up to number three in the field of 64, in the seedings. If they finish this thing number one in RPI, they're probably going to finish with a better SEC record than LSU. Like that's at least on the table, I should say. I shouldn't say probably. They might. They have a better SEC record than LSU right now. I mean, being the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament is not out of the question for the Gamecocks. Now, we cannot discuss whether you actually want that or not, given the history, but that's fully on the table for them. Anything they want is on the table. That's how well they're playing right now. And I've just been really impressed with the evolution throughout the season. You know, when I watched them early on against Clemson, I saw a good team that was still, you know, learning some things. And, you know, it was February or March or whatever it was. I guess it was the first weekend of March. You're supposed to be in that learning stage then, but not every team makes the steps that you need to make from, you know, that early March to the end of April. But I think South Carolina has continued to grow throughout the season, and that's why they are where they are. And they have a really good chance to finish strong. I think they do have two road series left against Kentucky and Arkansas. They have home against Auburn and Tennessee. But I like where they're at. I think that, you know, they know who they are now, and they're very, very comfortable with who they are, and they're very comfortable at home where they're 24-1 this season. So I, you know, on the flip side of all of this, if you're Florida, yes, this weekend was not good. Yes, there were concerns that were raised or reiterated, but I think you also have to understand that South Carolina's 24-1 at home. The only team that beat them at home was LSU, and that required a late comeback to do it. So, you know, if you're Florida, you definitely are not happy that you got swept. Even winning one game in Columbia would have been nice, but I'm not hitting the panic button for the Gators at this stage.
I was going to say, and that's such a good point to make, in talking about how great South Carolina was and all of the praise that they deserve. Of course, Kevin O'Sullivan and his staff aren't sitting there being like, oh, it's okay, guys. They're 24-1 at Founders Park. It was an uphill battle going into it. Like, great job. Like, they're not sitting there doing that, but similar to you, I am not worried in the slightest about Florida. I think this weekend was just much more validating on my end for South Carolina.
Yeah, and the concerns I would have for Florida right now are just where I don't think this is anything new when we talk about, like, does Florida have enough depth on the mound and everything? And yes, they were down their closer because Brandon Neely was suspended for the weekend following his ejection the week before. But yeah, you know, they didn't get him. That didn't really factor in the way that it's not like they blew multiple saves, I guess is what I'm saying. They did not have leads after the second inning of any of these games, I believe. Maybe it was the third. And so that's an issue. They've got to get better on the mound, whether that means more depth from the starters or finding bullpen arms or whatever. But the problem is it's May now almost. And how much better are you actually going to get? But they have to find a way to be a little bit better on the pitching side, because this is not the Florida teams that have the best pitching staffs in the country. Like that's just not who they are. And that's fine, because they've got a much better offense than some of those teams have had. But they are going to have to find a little more on the mound, I think, if they're going to you know, make that kind of postseason run that they're capable of.
I agree, and we're so late in the season that making an adjustment like this is pretty drastic and hard to pull off, but I've been thinking about it for a little while, and we even talked about it a few weeks back, maybe more than a month back on the college podcast, but I'd love to see or maybe wonder what Jack Caglione would look like in a 1-2 inning late reliever role or setup role as they hand the ball to Brandon Neely, even, because that's 97 to 100 from the left side with a budding breaking ball. And I feel like that's a guy who can just give you one or two innings, collect four Ks, and hang a couple of zeros in the later innings. Now, that's an elite coaching staff over there. So, of course, that's something that this isn't rocket science to them. This isn't some revelation. So I'm sure that they've already worked through this. But he has been at the plate. He's been maybe the best hitter in the country all year, other than Dylan Cruz and actually maybe even Ethan Petrie. But he's struggled in his last, I think it's been three of the last four starts or four of the last five where he's failed to make it through four complete innings, which they've gone 3-2 on Sundays in the last five Sundays, which, you know, it's fine. But that's kind of the one move I'm curious to see if they think about making here.
In SEC play, he has only gotten to five, you know, out of the fourth inning against Alabama and Georgia. And against Alabama, he gave up five runs in five innings. So Georgia's like the one, like, he was five innings, he gave up two runs. Like, you can feel good about that from your Sunday starter. I do think at this point, though, he kind of, like, this has to be their best option. Like, they are aware that he's not giving them length. You know, it doesn't take much to see that. Yoel Tejada is their midweek starter, and, like, he's been fine as a freshman, but, you know, clearly that doesn't seem like the move that they want to make. So I think this is what it is, and they have to piece it together on Sundays, and that makes it hard. You know, we'll see. You're saying it's late in the season to make these kinds of moves, and it is, but let's switch to Tennessee and Vanderbilt, because Tennessee has made some significant adjustments, and it led to some incredible success against Vanderbilt this weekend, or last weekend, in Knoxville. Vanderbilt comes in. They're leading the SEC East. They're rolling. They haven't lost a series all season. They're just coming off of that South Carolina series win. And meanwhile, Tennessee was scuffling as much as he could be. They'd just been swept at Arkansas. They lost to Tennessee Tech. They were on a four-game losing streak, and here come their rivals. And there went their rivals, because Tennessee really took it to them this weekend. They won 4-3 in extra innings on Friday night. That was a great gutty win by Tennessee. Tennessee needed a ninth inning comeback to tie that game and send it to extras, and then they were able to get it done there and win the opener. And then their offense just exploded the next couple days, especially on Saturday when they run ruled Vanderbilt. They finished it off the sweep with a 10-5 win on Sunday. Really impressive weekend all the way around for the Vols. But you know, to the extent that we were just talking about this with Florida, Tennessee took their struggling starting pitcher, Chase Burns, 2 weeks ago and put him in the bullpen. And against Arkansas, I mean, it worked. Like, Chase Burns threw five solid innings, but it was a more traditional, like, kind of long relief situation, piggyback maybe even. Against Vanderbilt, though, he comes in a high leverage situation on Friday night, gets out of a jam, takes them through extra innings, gives the offense time to finally break through against Nick Maldonado, and they win the game. And then they bring him back 2 days later on Sunday to finish off the game. It wasn't a safe situation, but I was incredibly impressed by what Chase Burns has showed out of the bullpen since they made that move. The fact that they're already using him twice in a weekend speaks volumes to me. And Andrew Lindsay's been quite good at the front of the rotation now. Chase Dollander has settled in and pitched so much better on Saturdays versus Fridays. I don't know what's up with that. You know, there are any number of things that go into being a Friday starter. I recently talked with Quinn Matthews about this at Stanford, and I will eventually write that story, hopefully within the next week. But he talked about just how much being the Friday starter, like, it's about, like there is just a difference. Like, the mentality that you have to have, that you're asked to have in that role, is different. And maybe Chase Dollander is just more comfortable on Saturdays. I don't know, but he's pitched better the last 2 weeks. And then Drew Beam is still out there doing his thing on Sundays for the most part. He's been Tennessee's most consistent starter all season long. So Tennessee seems to have found something that works with the pitching staff. And clearly they're comfortable playing at home. We know that. But it was a massive weekend. Like you said, Peter, this one really turns things around for Tennessee. They were 5-10 in the SEC play going into it. Backs against their wall. We had an outright discussion after they lost to Tennessee Tech about, is Tennessee going to salvage this thing and get to the postseason? We both said yes, but I think we both thought it was going to be closer than we do right now, because coming out of this series, it's hard not to feel great about where the Vols are.
Right, and we were sitting there talking about the Vols postseason aspirations almost as if they had already lost that series to Vanderbilt, because we were kind of thinking, okay, hopefully that they can avoid that sweep. Vanderbilt's playing exceptionally well right now. Tennessee, whatever the opposite of exceptionally well is. And after that Friday night walk-off, and I didn't want to assume the results of the rest of the series, but after that Friday night walk-off, things did feel a lot different. That was a game where I think that if they ended up losing it after tying it in the bottom of the ninth, if they lost that in extra innings, I'm not sure how they fare in the rest of that series, but I'm with you in, and as I said that, talking about how it might be too late for Florida to make a little switch in the rotation. The Tennessee audible, it might be drastic to say it, but it's borderline season saving, because Chase Burns was a legit weapon even as a starter. Yes, he had his struggles this year. He got hit a little bit, but out of the bullpen, there's not anyone in the, I don't want to go that far, but he is a very rare, very, very rare type of guy to have at your disposal.
And I mean, the dude's throwing 100. I don't know how many guys are throwing 100 out of the bullpen this year. I mean, I'm sure it's happening somewhere, because that's college baseball in 2022, or that's baseball in 2023. But that fastball, like his stuff is special.
I was going to say, there was one fastball and it was 100 elevated, and I think it was to get out of, gosh, either the 11th or the 12th inning, but he got out of the inning with a strikeout on an elevated fastball that on the stadium gun had at 100, and it looked like it just teleported to the catcher's mitt. And he just seems a lot more confident in this role and comfortable, and he seems way more in control on the mound. Like, he's the one that's dictating the pace as opposed to the opposing offense kind of taking it to him. And one of the last points he made, which was how they're comfortable using him twice in a weekend, I thought that stood out most to me when, after they used him for three on Friday. On Friday, they come back and use him again to close it on Sunday. And then the offense steps up, and it's kind of the Tennessee team we were waiting for all year. Hunter Ensley had a great weekend. Griffin Merritt was really impressive, and I know that he's gotten off to a bit of a slower start this year, but getting someone like him to produce as we head into the home stretch here is going to really pay dividends for the Vols. And then last night, they kind of do what we thought that they would do, or think that they would do to a lesser opponent in midweek, is they go out and win 19-1. So I want to be cautious in saying that Tennessee is fully back, because, well, I think that they're pretty safe in terms of a regional now, and they're honestly not out of contention. It's a little bit of a stretch at this point, but they're not out of a contention to even host a regional at this point, but they're pretty safe in the postseason. And what I think also plays in their favor is they have a pretty favorable schedule coming up. They welcome Mississippi State to Lindsey Nelson this weekend, and then they go to Georgia, and then they have Kentucky at home. So while there's really no easy weekend in the SEC, this is about as good of a stretch as the Vols could have lined up, I think, at this point, to get guys solidified in their roles, get Chase Burns even more comfortable out of the bullpen, establish Andrew Lindsey as your game one starter. And if they can ride this momentum into the postseason, we've seen it in the past with teams that have gotten off to slow starts, literally last year with Ole Miss. I don't think they'll be the last team in like Ole Miss, but we've seen it where teams will get off to a slow start. They're kind of figuring out where guys fit in, and they rip off however many games in a row and take it into the postseason and end up in Omaha. So very good times on Rocky Top, I think.
25-4 at home in Knoxville. I feel great about them and their two home series. Their two road series are tricky. We've talked at length already about how difficult it is to go to South Carolina, which is where Tennessee ends the season. Now, I mean, you can hope that maybe by then South Carolina's kind of finished everything they need to finish and is coasting into the SEC tournament. You know, we'll see. Their other road series is at Georgia in 2 weeks, and we'll get into how difficult that series has suddenly become. But in terms of just getting in, Tennessee's in a great spot now, and they'll, you know, if they can kick on from this, you know, if they can play like the Tennessee team that played this weekend for the next 4, 5, 6, however many more weeks there are left in the season, they'll be in a great spot to do whatever it is they're trying to do. And this weekend against Mississippi State, they've got the perfect opportunity to just keep this momentum going. It's a home weekend, and Mississippi State is coming off of a brutal series loss at Auburn that probably ended their postseason chances, which were very slim coming into that. But they blew a 7-run lead at Auburn in the finale of that series. They absolutely needed that game. They didn't get it. I think bouncing back from that, you know, staying on the road and going to Knoxville is asking an awful lot of Mississippi State, but they are the Bulldogs did just go out and beat Ole Miss in the Governor's Cup on Tuesday. So maybe that, you know, helped them move past that and get into a good mindset for this weekend. But Tennessee really needs to build off of this weekend moving forward. Quickly, Peter, with Vanderbilt, much like Florida, I'm not pressing a panic button. I'm concerned about Vanderbilt's depth on the mound when they're not fully healthy, which they're not right now, and it showed this weekend. They got to get back to that. Hopefully they are able to get back to that. If they're not fully healthy on the mound, they certainly they have some limitations, it seems like. Carter Holton was very good on Friday night. The rest of their pitching staff wasn't great. It's hard to pitch at Lindsey Nelson Stadium, especially if you're the kind of pitcher that Vanderbilt has. You know, they don't have the Chase Dollander throws their 98 and strike everybody out kind of staff. They have a like more traditional pitching staff that's typically full of left-handers, and it just makes for a tough matchup. That being said, however, I think it's fair to have some concerns about this Vanderbilt team. And what I initially thought early in the season was one of the best, or perhaps the best pitching staff in the country, certainly has had its depth exposed in SEC play.
I agree. And especially when they're not fully healthy is when holes like this are going to become even more gaping. I think with Vanderbilt not having Hunter Owen and a couple of bullpen arms this weekend in a hitter friendly ballpark at Tennessee, where so many of these guys are pitchability over stuff, with the exception of Patrick Riley and Grayson Carter and a couple of others, a lot of these guys are built on throwing quality strikes and living around the strike zone and avoiding hard contact. And when they don't have electric stuff, we kind of saw it with Bryce Cunningham. I mean, they're going to get hit around the yard a little bit. But with the overarching point of I'm not worried about Vanderbilt. I do think that they have a bit of an issue on the pitching side when their staff's not firing on all cylinders, because early in the year we were talking, and it's funny to see how all of these teams evolve as we actually get sample sizes worth noting. Early in the season, we were talking about Vanderbilt's pitching staff being one of, if not maybe the best in the country, up there with Wake Forest, with what they were doing and winning a bunch of 2-1 games and 2-0 games and getting by like that. But as we've come on and gone through the season, their offense has hit its stride. They're getting production from all parts of the order. And now it's kind of like, okay, the offense is carrying the load and the pitching has scuffled a little bit. But I do think that when you get a potential top 100 overall pick arm back in Hunter Owen, and you get some of these bullpen guys healthy, and Carter Holton really starts to hit his stride again and turn in like gems at some point, which I think he will. I think that they'll be just fine. And the key will be getting them healthy. That's not necessarily a given. Well, it's a given they'll get healthy, but it's not necessarily a given they'll be back to their best form. But once they get back and return to action and get their feet under them, I think that it'll be a concern that becomes less as we head into the postseason.
The other massive sweep in the SEC last weekend was Georgia taking down Arkansas. For me, that was maybe the most surprising. Tennessee was certainly surprising, but I did not anticipate Georgia sweeping Arkansas, and particularly the way they did it. They won three close games. They won on Thursday night, 6-5. Georgia got up early, held off a late Arkansas comeback attempt. They win 7-3 in the middle game. Again, get up early, hold off an Arkansas comeback attempt. And then on Saturday in the finale, it was the Bulldogs that came back. They were down 8-4 going into the ninth inning. Arkansas did not record an out in the ninth inning. The first three batters got on. Georgia gets a grand slam to tie the game. And then the very next pitch is a walk-off home run. And Georgia wins 9-8. And we talked about how much Tennessee flipped their postseason hopes. Georgia coming into the weekend was 4-11 in the SEC. I wasn't even really taking it. When I was looking at Field of 64 stuff, Georgia was not a team that I was spending any amount of time on. And now they're in the field because they're 7-11. They have a favorable schedule coming up. They're at Ole Miss this weekend. They're home against Tennessee. They're at Missouri. They're home against LSU. And I love the fact that their two quote-unquote easier series are on the road. Georgia's not an incredible road team by any means, but I'd rather... the way they're playing at home right now, having just swept Arkansas, they won a series against Kentucky. I would much rather have Tennessee and LSU coming to me than having to go to them. So we'll see what Georgia can do from here, but massive weekend for them. Georgia's really kind of flipped some of this, despite having some injuries. Jaden Woods didn't pitch this weekend, but they got a guy like Charlie Goldstein to step up. He threw six scoreless, and over the last 3 weeks, he's only given up three runs and 16 and a third. You got to have things like that happen. I mean, Charlie Condon has been leading the Georgia offense all year. He's great. He was great again this weekend. But having something like Goldstein step up like that, that is what allows a team like Georgia to rise up and have the run that they're currently putting together.
Right. And we saw it this weekend, and we've seen it in weekends past with Georgia when they also had a nice series win when it seemed like they won it in a flash, but on Easter Sunday they took two from Kentucky to notch another key series win. And this is a really underrated and scrappy bunch. Like you mentioned, they have the headliner with Charlie Condon, and then Connor Tate is the other guy who's been really producing. But other than that, They've had guys step up and down the lineup. You've seen even people like grad transfer Mason LaPlante have good games. Corey Collins has not been as productive as the staff probably would have thought he was going to be this year, but he's still producing. Parks Harbor has 14 home runs. And what they have on the pitching staff, I think, makes them most intriguing, because Charlie Goldstein is another kind of pitchability lefty, more than I think Liam Sullivan is, because Sullivan has much better stuff, especially with his changeup. But Goldstein was able to keep the Florida lineup off balance for his start, and he did so again this weekend with Arkansas, and that becomes a pretty formidable rotation once they get Jaden Woods back. If they opt to go three lefties with Woods, Sullivan, and Goldstein, and it's going to create a lot of matchup problems for opposing lineups, because they're all lefties with good stuff. They're going to pound the strike zone, and then they have good bullpen arms with Dalton Radins and freshman Matthew Hoskins, who's really stepped up and I've been impressed with. So it was a little bit of a bummer that they lost last night against Georgia State in their midweek, but right now they've got an RPI of 26. They have, I think, a pretty favorable schedule remaining. Like you said, they welcome Tennessee to Athens, which is where they've played. They've played solid all year, but again, you'd rather welcome them to Athens than go on the road to Lindsey Nelson to face a surging Tennessee team, and one that I assume and probably think is still going to be playing pretty good baseball. And then it's, they go to Missouri, which Missouri is a solid club. They've fallen off a little bit, and then LSU. But with LSU, I alluded to the Rocky IV Ivan Drago being cut reference a little bit a couple weeks ago. And I think now more than ever, they're human. They've now lost two consecutive midweek games, and that's a whole other wormhole to go down. But the bottom line is that the Dogs have a pretty, they've got a good thing going right now. And I think that they're going to have to really play themselves out of the tournament with what they have left and what I think that they're going to rack up. So they really got back up from the mat this weekend. And I hope that the Georgia State loss doesn't carry into this weekend, because that would be a little bit of a bummer, I think, for them to go down to Oxford and drop a series. But they're a team I'm really intrigued about down south.
I think, you know, obviously you don't want to lose those midweeks, but for so many SEC teams at this point, like not for rankings purposes, like they still count their wins and losses. But if you're looking at just tournament stuff for a team like Georgia, like it almost doesn't even matter anymore. Their RPI is fine. Like the better your RPI is, maybe the more leniency the committee will show. But like if you win these SEC games, like, they'll fix everything that just happened to their RPI, which was at falling 8 spots by losing to Georgia State. Like, you just take care of business in the SEC. You get to that 13-14 win mark in the SEC, and the rest of this takes care of itself. So, yes, I say that for Georgia, but I also say that for Arkansas, who we're going to talk about now, and for anyone else. LSU lost last night. Like, somebody will lose next week. And all of this is kind of irrelevant. The SEC games are really what matters if you're looking at tournament stuff. Arkansas now, they lost to Missouri State last night. They've lost 4 straight. Arkansas is a team that has played abysmally on the road, and that's what the last 4 games have kind of reinforced. This is a team that is 3-7 in true road games, and 2 of those wins are against Ole Miss, which obviously is, you know, not last year's Ole Miss. So the bigger concern, though, with Arkansas, like taking away the road game concern, is that they are very injured right now. Jared Wagner out with a broken thumb. Their catcher, Parker Rowland, was out most of the Georgia series, if not all of the Georgia series. Tavian Josenberger, their center fielder, left the finale against Georgia with an injury. They've got arms that are banged up. They're hoping to get Brady Tiger back soon, but they've got arms that are banged up. It's all just starting to kind of add up a little bit for the Razorbacks.
I was going to say, this is the first kind of stretch of games where I think I've seen, and we've all seen, these injuries kind of rear their head with Arkansas, because to this point they've been able to get by. But when you have someone like Jackson Wiggins go down and Brady Tiger go down for an extended period, and then also another key bullpen arm go down in Cody Frank, it's kind of like, okay, we can maybe make do without these guys, but we really cannot afford anyone else on either side of the baseball go down with an injury. And it's unfortunate what happened with Wagner, and Josenberger's banged up, and other guys have nicks and bruises. So I think that I'm of the SEC teams that got swept, of the notable top 10 teams with Florida, Vandy, and Arkansas, I'm absolutely most concerned about the Razorbacks. Like you said, 3-7 in true road games. They're very, very injured right now. And as you head into the postseason, depth is what gets you to Omaha, gets you through super regionals, and even game threes in regionals, or game fives, I guess I should say. But it is, they've got to get these guys back and healthy, especially Brady Tigert and Jared Wagner will, it sounds like, will be back before season's end. But I just, yeah, I'm with you in, I really question the depth that they have right now and how far they can really go. And it just seems like, I don't want to say running out of gas because that might not be the right phrase, but it just seems like the season is, it's catching up to them and it doesn't get any easier in SEC play. Of course, they get Texas A&M at home, which is where they're 25-3, and then they go to Mississippi State. But then heading into the SEC tournament, they've got South Carolina and Vandy. So a really tough stretch coming for the Hogs, and I'm very curious to see how they can bounce back given the personnel that they have.
I have real concerns. You know, when you hear any sort of hand injury for a hitter, like that's just very concerning. Like Wagner will probably come back before the end of the season, but he won't be the same hitter. Like that, it's just very hard to recapture your power quickly when you have a hand injury. Tavian Josenberger is dealing with some sort of hamstring injury, and in the like immediate aftermath, Dave Van Horn was like, well, and those usually take a while. And they do, particularly for somebody who, you know, he's running around center field. You know, we're not talking about a stationary player. And they need the help on the pitching side. They need Tiger to come back and be good. You know, Roland did make an appearance in yesterday's game. So like that is a bit of positive news for them as well. But they've got to find a way to recover from this. It's a big weekend at home against A&M. A&M kind of needs this weekend as well. Like they're playing very well. They just went out and won a series at Kentucky. So it's not the biggest series in the SEC this weekend, but it's maybe the one I'm most interested in is what's happening in Fayetteville.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I kind of draw it to or compare it to last week with Tennessee and Vanderbilt. And the Razorback situation isn't as dire as Tennessee's was, but they really need a series win this weekend against A&M. And it's against an A&M team that's been playing well as of late. They're coming off a big series win against Kentucky. And, I mean, right now they're not a team I'd want to face, especially given their injury troubles. So I'm looking forward to seeing how Arkansas responds and if they lose another series, especially at home, then I'll really start to be kind of wary of what's going on in Fayetteville.
I mentioned there were 5 sweeps in SEC play last week, and the other 2 were LSU taking care of Ole Miss. Hayden Travinsky hit an absolute mammoth home run. A mammoth home run. With LSU down to its last strike in the finale to send LSU to a win and to the first SEC sweep. And then the other one, which was more significant, was Alabama swept Mizzou. Pivotal series for both teams' tournament hopes. Mizzou's kind of dead in the water now, and Alabama got a huge boost from that and should be able to kick on from here, though the rest of their season is difficult. This weekend, we already mentioned most of these series, but the highlight is Vanderbilt and Kentucky, A&M and Arkansas is a big one as well, and LSU Alabama is an intriguing one for me. But there are no bad series in the SEC this year, that's to be sure. But all right, we're going to move on to talk about one of the hottest teams in the country, that is Duke. Duke has a massive series against Virginia coming up this weekend, coming off of a huge series sweep of Louisville. We're going to get into all of that, all things Blue Devils, here in a second. But first, check this out.
We've all been there. You settle into your seats and then you wonder, you know, did I overpay for these tickets? Were there better tickets available that I missed? You don't have to worry about that anymore because there's Game Time. Buying tickets to your favorite event shouldn't be stressful. Game Time is the fast and easy way to buy tickets for all sports, music, comedy, and theater around you. Hopping into the Game Time app, I discovered events I want to go to that I didn't even know were coming to my area. They have flash deals and last-minute tickets, and it's easy to find and buy tickets for every kind of event in your area. And before you buy the ticket, before you check to select a seat, you can see a picture from that seat to get an idea of what your viewing will be like. Game Time is the place for last-minute ticket deals. Forget planning months in advance. Game Time has deals right up to the day of the event. The Game Time guarantee means you always get the best price. If you find tickets in the same section, same row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. It's the fastest growing ticket app in the country for a reason. You can buy your tickets in a matter of seconds, two taps and you're set, and the tickets are sent directly to your phone. You don't have to worry about digging through your email. So snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code BASEBALLAMERICA for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code BASEBALLAMERICA for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
All right, Peter, it kind of snuck up on me, but it's been building for a little bit here. Duke is one of the absolute hottest teams in the country. They went out and they swept Louisville last weekend in one of the most exciting series of the weekend, because two of the games were walk-offs for the Blue Devils, and then the finale was not a walk-off, but they did score the winning run. Or the go-ahead run in the eighth inning. So three comebacks for the Blue Devils. I mean, it says a lot about their toughness and their bullpen and, you know, just everything, all those kinds of things, to be able to do that three times to Louisville. They've won 12 of their last 14 after beating Campbell on Tuesday night. They've surged to the top of the ACC Coastal Division, a half game ahead of Virginia. They've surged into the top 15 of RPI. I have them as hosts in the latest edition of the projected field. And I mean, we can talk about their series, their suddenly massive series against Virginia coming up this weekend, but let's just spend some time on how Duke has gotten here, because this is a team that did start the season fine, but certainly was not playing at this level through the first half of the year.
Right, and I think that the strength of this team is the depth that they have on the mound, because every single guy that I've seen them roll out is pitching in the mid-90s with a breaking ball that flashes plus, and they could throw anyone, I think, on that pitching staff right now and be confident in them going an extended period of time and getting outs. And what I'm even more impressed by is they've done a lot of this and established themselves as a likely regional host, as being talked about as the class of the ACC, as a potential college. They've done all of this without Jonathan Santucci, who coming into this year was going to be their Friday guy, and he had done well in that role. And he's been out for some time with an injury. It's kind of TBD on when they'll get him back or if they'll get him back. But their bullpen has just been absolute nails. And that's a bullpen that I'd put them up against anyone in the country without a doubt. With Fran O'Shell, he's taken a huge jump in his stuff. He went from last year being more of a pitchability guy to now coming out and pumping 94 to 98 with a plus breaking ball. James Talon is, I think, their best true freshman, and that's saying something with someone like Aiden Weaver, but 6'5 lefty, uncomfortable slot. Andrew Healy. I mean, I could go down the entire Blue Devils pitching staff and give a rave review on basically anybody. So I think they've gotten here with pitching and timely hitting, which is kind of a baseball cliche. But Duke's a perfect example of how that works, because you're not putting a lot of stress on your offense. They're not pressing for hits, and it's just kind of all clicking for them. And they're now 2-0 on the season against Campbell. And when it first kind of, my first kind of whoa Duke thought was after that series win against Boston College, because I look up and I saw their record in the ACC and what they've kind of done this year, and I was like, okay, wow, this series against Louisville is suddenly a lot more interesting. And then they sweep Louisville, and I'm like, okay, this Duke team is very, very much for real, and is one of the top teams in the country. So pitching and timely hitting, I think, have gotten them to this point. Alex Mooney has anchored the offense. They've gotten production from transfer Jay Bashirs, who transferred from Northwestern. and freshman Andrew Fisher actually broke the freshman home run record, the longstanding freshman home run record at Duke, and he now has 10. He's sitting above 300. So everywhere you look, guys are stepping up for the Blue Devils. But I think I'm most blown away by their pitching and the depth that they have on the mound, because, again, kind of talking about in a tournament setting with regionals and super regionals and the ACC tournament, you're going to want to have, you know, 10 to 12 guys plus that you're comfortable putting out there in a big time setting. And Duke is one of the very few teams in the country that I think can say that. So they're in a very good spot going forward. I think if they can beat UVA, they are, outside of Wake Forest, I think they're the class of the ACC. So really looking forward to this weekend.
So Duke ranks now fifth in the country in ERA. This is a team that, like, to your point, Santucci is a high level prospect, like should be a premier Friday night guy, but he's hurt right now. They don't have a pitcher that's thrown even 40 innings yet this season, but what they have, like, they've thrown 15 pitchers for more than 10 innings, I think it is. It's something incredible. The depth that they're rolling out there, the way that they're piecing this together has been, you know, it just takes a lot to do it that way. Like, it's one thing, and like Wake Forest being able to put together the rotation that they have, like, that is special. It's a different kind of special to do it the way that Duke's doing it. And, you know, Brady Kirkpatrick is in his first season as Duke's pitching coach, and he's done a great job piecing this together. I can't imagine this is the way that they drew it up. It's obviously not the way that they drew it up without Santucci, but it's working for him, and it's working for them at a really, really high level. The offense is not the most powerful in the country. Some of that is the park that they play in. You know, playing in a AAA ballpark, it's a little bit bigger. They're not going to be the power hitting team that some other teams are, but they just do a really good job, and they play together really well. They fight. Like, this weekend was very impressive against Louisville. Alex Mooney with the incredible walk-off grand slam on Friday night, and he and Alex Stone both coming through in the clutch all weekend long was massive for the Blue Devils. And right now, the only team that has more ACC wins than them is Wake Forest. They, Boston College, and Virginia all have 12. Massive series in Charlottesville this weekend. And it was made all the more massive because UVA has now lost back-to-back series. Following losing their first series of the year at home against Pitt 2 weeks ago, they went to South Bend last weekend and they got swept. And in the way that we were talking about those SEC series and teams like Georgia and Tennessee kind of recalibrating their postseason hopes with their sweeps, that's what Notre Dame did. Notre Dame was looking like bubble out at best going into that UVA series, but they flipped it by getting that sweep against Virginia, and now they're sitting at 11-10 in the ACC, and you know, the magic number in the ACC is 15. Notre Dame has three ACC series left. I feel pretty good about them getting to that number and getting in. You know, all of that's great for Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame is a really solid team, but for Virginia to go up there and get swept, I mean, that raises some real questions, and they now have to come home and play a series that basically is for the division title, that might be for top eight seeding purposes, and they're just going to have to find a way to get right immediately, because a really good Duke team is coming to Charlottesville this weekend.
Yeah, and credit to Notre Dame, because it's a veteran-clad bunch. Not a lot of people were high on them coming into the season, and they now sit in a position where they're probably going to have to play themselves out of a tournament bid at this point. But in talking about UVA, they get swept against Notre Dame and South Bend, and then last night it takes a five-run eighth to come back and beat Liberty in a midweek. And while it's still a really good club, they've had kind of their weaknesses show over. Their offense hasn't been as high powered as it has been all year. And I think on the mound, it is absolutely their strength. But they lose to Pitt. They lose a series to Pitt. They get swept against Notre Dame. And the last team that I'd want to face if I was anyone in the country right now, let alone a UVA team that has lost two straight ACC series and three of their last four, is Duke. The one thing that they do have going for them is they get them at home, which is where they're 24-2. And similar to Arkansas, like you were saying, UVA is only 8-7 in true road games this year, which, you know, that's a problem when you start to talk about how they're going to play away from home in the postseason. But the offense, Griff O'Farrell, Kyle Teal, and Jake Geloff, that's kind of their big three. And then on the pitching side of things, I don't know if they maybe have they certainly do not have the depth that a Duke team does. I think I'm less bullish on the pitching staff than I was even in the middle of the year. I just am not sure of I'm just not as confident in the pitching staff. I'll just say that. But definitely concerned about the Hoos. This is not the time of year, obviously, that you want to be playing in bad baseball and scuffling. They're totally fine when it comes to the postseason, and honestly probably hosting too, but this is a very important series because there's a chance we're sitting here next Wednesday talking about a UVA team that has now lost three ACC series in a row, and then they have to play Louisville. So very important series, both in the overall ACC standings, at least in the Coastal, and then for UVA to get right, which at this point, I'm certainly not going to bet against Duke and say that Duke is going to lose a series. So they've got their work cut out for them.
Playing at UVA is going to be a challenge that Duke should be up to. It's going to be a tougher road series than really any they've faced. They've been to UNC, which is a tough place to play. But for Duke, it's a little different since they're sleeping in their own beds. And they won a series at BC, which is challenging. Obviously, BC is a good team, and it's challenging because, you know, it's a tough travel weekend. But, you know, the fan support isn't the same as what they'll see this weekend in Charlottesville. So it's kind of a uniquely difficult road test for Duke. If they pass this one, though, I mean, I really feel great about them. Like, they still have to go to Miami. Duke has made an incredible rise under Chris Pollard over the last decade. You know, they'd had one of those incredibly long postseason droughts. They've gone past that. They've won an ACC tournament. They've done a lot of things like this. They've gone to a point where they're just a consistent regional program. They haven't hosted a regional yet. This year it feels like maybe it's going to be the year. It's an interesting, like, how Duke goes about hosting a regional, because I think they have to host at Jack Coombs versus hosting it at Durham Bulls Athletic Park. So they'll be on campus in their old stadium versus being in the AAA park. But, you know, no matter how it happens, if it happens, that'd be another great moment for Duke baseball and for Chris Pollard as he has continued to build this program. Flip side of all of this is Louisville. Louisville now 8-10. In the ACC. How concerned are you, Peter?
It's hard to completely discount a Dan McDonald coach team, but I am absolutely concerned about Louisville, and not necessarily about their postseason aspirations. I think that they'll get into a regional and all of that, but I think that their ceiling at this point is pretty limited, and we kind of have seen what they are, which is a good, not necessarily great team. And we've seen flashes of what they can be. But in back-to-back series against Wake and Duke, which are for what we just talked about, two of probably the best teams in the ACC along with UVA, and combine that with a midweek game against Indiana. They kind of got handled with ease, and granted they've been without Christian Knapcheck for a few games, but on offense, they just, it's been a struggle for them to find production. They are not a very power oriented team. They're not going to change the game and change the complexion of a game with one swing. It's kind of like Jack Payton and Ryan McCoy are their two power guys. And other than that, it's a bunch of, I think, singles guys with the ability to shoot the gap or put one over the wall on occasion. So they've really had to pitch at a high level, which they've done with Carson Liggett leading the way with a 1.64 ERA. But outside of Liggett, they've gotten some good production out of their bullpen arms with Tucker Bibben and Tate Keener and Caleb Corbett now. But it's just kind of, I mean, I think the writing's on the wall there for Louisville. Of course, anything can happen in the postseason, but I've seen them against the good teams in the ACC and the better teams in the ACC. And I think that their most impressive weekend to date was that sweep over Boston College, which is nothing to be down about, but that's kind of a, I guess, it's just not a super loud body of work for the Cardinals. And granted, they get a nice 7-0 shutout win over rival Kentucky last night on the road. But I think what we have with Louisville is a solid team, one that when everything's clicking and everything's on, they're going to pose a lot of problems, but there's just lack of depth and I think lack of production on both sides of the base, particularly offense. The offense has just been, it's been a struggle for them.
Yeah, speaking of takes that we had earlier in the season or opinions that we were forming that are definitely wrong now, there was a time that I'm pretty sure I wrote that like Louisville had one of the best pitching staffs in the country and that their pitching staff would like carry them to Omaha and all the rest of it. And the depth has become an issue. They have not been able to recapture what they did in Houston at the Shriners tournament in terms of the rotation, which was so good that weekend. They just haven't been able to find that consistently. And, you know, this weekend, the rotation did its job at Duke. The bullpen let it down. You know, to lose three games, lose the lead in the eighth or the ninth inning three times, I mean, that's brutal. And, you know, credit to Louisville for bouncing back and going out and winning at Kentucky last night. That's got to help them. They've got Miami coming in this weekend. That's not an easy series. We've talked at length about how good Louisville is at home. They're going to have to use that home field advantage because they are now 8-10. And like, I hear you, you're not concerned about them getting into the postseason. I mean, I am a little bit. Like, I still have them in. The issue is just like they're running out of time and they have to get to 15 wins. No ACC team has gotten into the tournament with a losing ACC record since 2016. Every year's different. Like maybe this year will be the year, who knows, but like you don't want to. NC State thought they were going to be fine last year, having gone 14-15 and reaching the ACC tournament championship game, and they got left out. So I wouldn't want to press my luck if I was an ACC team. So to get to 15 wins, like that means they got to go and win seven games in their last four series. Completely doable, but home against Miami, at Clemson, at Virginia, and then home against Florida State. It's not the easiest path. It's manageable, but they need to take advantage of their home games because of how good they are at Jim Patterson Stadium. So intriguing weekend with Miami on deck for the Cardinals.
For sure. And looking at their remaining schedule, like you mentioned, it's Miami at home, a really good Clemson team they'll have to get on the road, a very good Virginia team that they'll have to get on the road, and then they close it with Florida State. And when you made that point with the ACC magic number being 15 and Louisville sitting at 8 conference wins, not to mention the fact that they're 4-8 in true road games, they're in a pretty precarious position. And this Miami series, I think now, is pretty close to a must win, because if you drop two and you only get one, against Miami, you're now going to have to win at least, they're probably going to have to win the remaining three series or pull off a sweep of someone, which is not going to be easy considering who they have left. So the magnitude of this Miami series and the importance of this Miami series has skyrocketed for them after the egg that they laid this past weekend.
Yeah, I never, when I'm doing projections, I never want to just project a sweep, like, because that just usually isn't realistic. But to get Louisville to 15 wins and to include them in the field this week, I have them sweeping Florida State. I think by the end of the season, Florida State will have, they'll be ready to pack that one in, and they'll be halfway to their summer ball assignments already by that weekend, I am sure. So I'm willing to spot Louisville those three wins. But that still means they have to win one of the other series. And so this weekend's their best shot at that. So big one for Louisville. Big weekend around the ACC. Also very intrigued with Clemson going up to Duke. Clemson is coming off of a sweep of NC State that was pivotal to both of those teams' postseason hopes. I now have NC State bubble out. They already have 12 ACC losses. And again, 15 is the magic number. It's going to be real hard for NC State to get to that now. And Clemson is surging, not quite at the Duke level, but they're surging. They're 9-9 in the ACC, and they finished difficult, can dig themselves out of the hole that they put themselves in the first part of ACC play. And the tournament is very much on the table after that sweep in Raleigh, which, I mean, truly was stunning. I did not see that one coming at all. Of all of these sweeps that we'll talk about around the country last weekend, honestly, that one might have been the biggest surprise to me. Like, Georgia, Arkansas probably still remains that, but Clemson over NC State, I really did not see that one coming.
Right, and neither did I. And that was a real blow for NC State with their tournament hopes. Like you mentioned, it's going to be – it is a really uphill battle for them to get to the 15 now. And all of a sudden, Clemson has played themselves into the postseason, and the ACC is – I mean, it's not a mess on the level that the Big 12 is at, but it's hard to figure out outside of Wake, Duke, and UVA as the three best teams in the conference. Other than that, I think that anyone can beat up on anyone on any given weekend. And this Clemson-Boston College series is very intriguing this weekend. Clemson playing really well. BC also playing really well, coming off of their first ever sweep and first ever wins in Chapel Hill, which I think is right up there for most surprising result of the weekend, with you having Clemson over NC State. As a BC football fan and basketball fan, I've been so used to being let down time and time again, but this baseball team has done just the exact opposite for its fans. And so them going on the road and sweeping a previously ranked North Carolina team, I thought was pretty stunning. And especially it looked like BC was kind of reverting, I guess, back to past year's form, where the season was just kind of going to turn into a pumpkin and they were going to spiral. But they come down, they go down to Chapel Hill, they sweep the Tar Heels, they win an exciting game in the finale to complete the sweep. So this is a very intriguing series now with a BC team that in your latest Field of 64 is projected to host, and they welcome a very solid Clemson team to Chestnut Hill. So very intriguing series on tap. In talking through this, I really like this Clemson team. And now this is the first year of the Coach Backich era, and for as great of a coach and as great of a recruiter he is, they're only going to get better. But what he's got going right now is pretty special too, especially with freshman Cam Cannarella hitting 400, Cooper Engel stepping up, Will Taylor, also the Clemson football wide receiver, playing well. So a very good one on tap in Chestnut Hill that I'm excited to see how the Tigers carry over the momentum from another key road series win.
That's a team that's gotten a lot better. When I saw them early in the season, I watched pretty much all of their series against South Carolina early, and I was like, well, okay, they're good. They ran out of pitching. Well, they're healthier. They've figured out some things on the mound. They know who they've got, who they don't have, and they're playing just so much better as a result of all of that. And I think they're they're going to be a problem down the stretch. Their closing schedule is a challenge for them, but it's everything is to play for after what they did in Raleigh last weekend. Let's head out west. The big series last weekend was Arizona State against Oregon State. That one was a wild one. Oregon State got up huge early on ASU and barely held on Friday night, but they did hold on for a win. The good thing from ASU's perspective was they mounted a comeback, forced Oregon State to pitch their best bullpen arms, which would have a significant impact on the rest of the series. If ASU doesn't mount that impact, doesn't mount that comeback, and Oregon State has fresh relievers on Saturday and Sunday, I think the series goes differently. As it was, Arizona State was able to rebound from that loss, come back, win the series, remain in first place in the Pac-12. And look, I still have some skepticism about Arizona State. This is still a team that's short on the mound. They made Oregon State look like a really good offense, and that's just not the case. Oregon State's a pitching and defense team. But Arizona State really showed me something with their resilience. They lost 20-0 to Arizona in the midweek. They get down huge to Oregon State on Friday. They could have folded. They could have folded the entire week, but they didn't. They, like I said, they fought back on Friday night, changed the complexion of the weekend by doing so, and then come out and finish off the series win.
That was super impressive, the resiliency they showed, because after that Friday night loss, which where they went down big early, they make it really interesting with a 6-run eighth inning, and then they go quietly in the ninth to lose. That's a tough one to bounce back from and a tough Saturday game to get up for. And it showed early on. I mean, they overcame a 5-0 deficit and a 10-6 deficit in the same game. And like you said, they got to an Oregon State pitching staff that has been excellent all year. And you look at a guy like Ryan Brown, especially, he had given up one earned run in his first 19 1/3 innings. And Arizona State tags him for 4 earned in 2/3 of an inning in his Saturday appearance. And they did the same thing with AJ Hutchison, not the 4 earned in 2/3, but they made a shutdown bullpen arm look pretty human, and they made a excellent rotation. I mean, they got to an excellent rotation, and I'm with you in that their offense is excellent with Ryan Campos and Luke Kuechel. They've also gotten production out of a duo of freshmen in Luke Hill and Nuke Entradas, Jacob Tobias anchoring the right side of the infield at first base. But the pitching staff is just one that I'm a little concerned with. They've also kind of dealt with some injuries, and I'm just not totally sold on the starting rotation. Now, that's not to say that they aren't a great team. I think they're a very good team, but I just kind of question their ceiling at this point. I do kind of tend to still think and lean towards Stanford being the class of the Pac-12. But last weekend did show us a lot about the Sun Devils. I mean, they're 12th for a reason. Is some of that due to other teams falling and being swept? Absolutely. But I mean, that's a big series win. We had talked about it last week, how good Oregon State was and how sound a brand of baseball they play with their great defense and pitching. Their defense was fine. But again, ASU gets a really good pitching staff. They get a nice win over Cal State Fullerton in midweek last night being Tuesday. We'll know, as you're listening to this, we'll have known what happened in today's midweek game against Cal State Fullerton. But that takes them into another key Pac-12 series this weekend against the Ducks of Oregon on the road in Eugene.
Yeah, another big one as they do the Oregon double here. Oregon coming off of a series win at Cal. I mean, that's not anything as impressive as what Arizona State's coming off of, but both of them coming in with some momentum. Oregon projected right now in the latest Field of 64 as a host. It's not the most like solid hosting spot, though, I would say. And Arizona State is sitting there, RPI 28, as we talk on Wednesday. We'll see what happens after that Fullerton game today. hosting is within range for the Sun Devils. I've said before on the podcast that I'm still somewhat skeptical because of how difficult their remaining schedule is. Oregon State was a nice start to that for the Sun Devils. They've got to keep it going, though. But because of how difficult the schedule is, it means that they have the ability to lift that RPI. And if they're able to do that, I mean, this is a team that I think could be in the hosting conversation. They're going to need it this weekend on the road in Eugene, I think, however. Not an easy place to go, particularly if you're a team that is, you know, as offensive as Arizona State is. You're going to a more a park that's less offensive friendly, though it plays a little bit bigger now than it did when it opened. They've adjusted the dimensions to help that along. But I think this is a really interesting matchup in terms of some contrasting styles. Oregon has had some really good starting pitching lately, particularly from Jace Stoffel on Friday night. So for me, this is a very intriguing series, probably the best one out west this weekend.
And they're a little bit like, they're kind of a blend of Oregon State and Arizona State, the Ducks are, because they've got more depth, I think, offensively than the Beavers do, with Sabine Ceballos and Drew Cowley, Colby Shade, Tanner Smith, and Riku Nishida. I mean, that's a pretty solid five with a guy like Jacob Walsh being your power guy with 11 home runs. And then not to mention, like you said, Jace Stoffel has been a real anchor for them now on Friday nights. Logan Mercado, we've seen what he can do with this complete game shutout of Stanford. And then they've gotten excellent pitching out of their bullpen with Josh Mullerus, and Austin Anderson's been great. And then freshman Matthew Grabin has actually stepped up on Sundays for him. So heading up to PK Park, I think that, and it's not too crazy to say, but I think that this weekend is potentially even a little bit more of a challenge, I'd say, for the Sun Devils to keep this thing going, because it's going to be cold up in Oregon, and Oregon's a really good team. You're playing on the road. And in terms of hosting, which is still very much in the picture for them, given their RPI, they're within striking distance, and their body of work, while they're going to be able to strengthen that RPI, their remaining schedule is very, very difficult after today being Wednesday. After their game with Cal State Fullerton, they have one midweek left in the season, and it's against UC Riverside. But on the weekends, it's at Oregon, home against Stanford, at USC, and home against UCLA. And none of those, by any stretch, you can, I think, chalk up as a win for either team in that series, because I think they're all four going to be very well played and very intriguing. But it gets a lot tougher for the Sun Devils, and I don't want to say they need this series against Oregon to host, but it's one that's going to really go a long way for them when we get to Selection Monday and we're discussing, and the committee's discussing various teams' body of work and hosting. So ASU enters their own little gauntlet to close the season, and this is a big one up in Eugene.
One more from this coming weekend to look at, and then we'll look at a couple more of the significant results from last weekend. This coming weekend, we have a showdown at the top of the Big Ten. It is Indiana hosting Maryland. IU has a one-game lead on the Terps. The Hoosiers are in a position to host. Their RPI is 13. They're 31-11. They're rolling right now. They've won eight straight, including a win against Louisville last week. Very impressive. I've been impressed with the way Indiana has pitched. They have some offensive firepower. Maryland has some big-time arms, some offensive firepower of their own. I think this is probably going to be an offensive weekend. They often are at Bart Kaufman. And low-key, Bart Kaufman has been an incredibly difficult place to go play this season. 22-1 Indiana is at home. Maryland knows what's on at stake. They're the reigning Big Ten champs. If they want to repeat, they got to get it done this weekend. You know, it's neither of these teams, I think, is as good as Maryland was a year ago. But I think Indiana is a really good team in their own right. And I think Maryland's a really good team in their own right. If you can kind of remove the 2022 Terps from your mind, you can really appreciate what the 2023 Terps are. Matt Shaw has been incredible for them. And I think this is a really fun showdown between the two best teams in the conference.
No doubt. And one of the most underrated stats maybe out there is that Indiana is 22-1 at home. They're just 8-9 in true road games. But like you said, how great of a team last year's Terrapins bunch was, it might make this Maryland team seem a little bit underwhelming to some folks. But don't get it twisted that this is also a very quality Maryland team. What they did last year is hard to replicate, but like you said, Matt Shaw's been great, and they've gotten Nick LaRusso has very quietly been he's produced one of the more impressive years of anyone on offense. He's hitting .367 with 14 doubles, 15 home runs, 66 RBIs. He's got more extra base hits than strikeouts, and he's been excellent. Eddie Hacopian too, Luke Schlieger, and on the mound, Jason Savakul has kind of been their guy on Fridays, who's been he's been awesome. So it's going to be tough going to IU, 22-1. They're the class of the Big Ten. Pitching has been great on offense. Brock Tibbetts has been otherworldly lately. Freshman Devin Taylor. So it's going to be a really good series. So I'm excited to see how it shakes out.
Absolutely. The Big Ten is not at the top of anybody's mind this year because most of these teams haven't been ranked. We moved Indiana in this week, but I think that it's a series worth keeping an eye on this weekend. Last weekend, we saw a couple of other first place showdowns in the Sun Belt. It was Coastal Carolina and Southern Miss. Coastal comes away with the series win there. They won the first two games. They dropped 35 runs in the first two games. Southern Miss did get a nice win, a nice offensive win. They won 15-7 of their own on Sunday, but Coastal consolidates its position atop the Sun Belt standings and as a potential top eight seed with that series win. And then Indiana State took care of business against Southern Illinois. They swept at home. The Sycamores did. They have a 14-game winning streak. Their RPI is now 9. And I said a week ago that we would have to take them seriously as potential hosts if they won this series. I am now taking them so seriously as potential hosts. I think it's going to happen. I projected it this week. I think that their resume is going to end up looking a lot like Georgia Southern's did a year ago. Georgia Southern was rewarded with the host. I've been to Terre Haute. It's been a while since I've been to Terre Haute, but it's not a place that, you know, they have a very nice tradition at Indiana State. It's not a place I would have expected a regional to end up, but here we are. And I think it has a very real chance of happening. They're playing really, really well. They're clearly the best team in the Valley this year. And shouts to the Sycamores who, you know, they can pitch it. That's typically what they do really well, and they're doing it again this year. Mitch Hanna's again doing a great job at Indiana State.
I was gonna say, I was from a sheer also fan of the game perspective, I was so fired up when I saw Indiana State as that 16th host in the projected field of 64 today. And that's a great point comparing them to Georgia Southern of last year, because it's eerily similar. I mean, the 6 RPI is, I think it's sitting, they're 9th right now in the country. In the Missouri Valley, they really should not lose another series the rest of the way. That Missouri State one to close it out is interesting. But it's going to be pretty smooth sailing for them. They've got a tough midweek against Illinois, and they go to Missouri. But it's a really, really talented bunch. This was a team we were talking about even ranking this past week, and they were one of the first couple of teams we omitted from the 25, but they are right there in top 25 territory. And like you said, they can really pitch it. Matt Jacek on the mound on Fridays has been excellent. He's a strike thrower. And then out of the bullpen, Jared Spencer, 6'5 lefty or 6'3 lefty with the flowing red hair. I mean, he's been up to 96 with a plus slider. And then they've got a great supporting cast with Cameron Holy Cross, great last name. Shout out to Holy Cross. But no, this is a very good ball club. They are for real. And whether they're a host or a 2 seed or a 3 seed, whatever it ends up being, nobody is going to want to see this Indiana State team, because I think that what they've done is not just a byproduct of facing a lesser schedule. I think that this is a team that can compete with the best in the country.
Yeah, they've faced an elite schedule. In fact, their non-conference strength of schedule is number one. It's not a byproduct of anything. Now, you can argue that they've lost an awful lot of those games, and that is a ding on their resume right now. They're just 2-9 against RPI top 50 teams. One of those wins, however, came last week against Vanderbilt in a midweek. And I know that that's going to come up. It's going to come up in the committee room. It's going to come up on your TV screen when people are talking about should they host, should they not host. I'm just here to tell you that Georgia Southern also had a losing record against the top 50, and their record against the top 25 was pretty bad last year. And they still, if Indiana State finishes with a top 15 RPI with an elite strength of schedule the way they have now, they're number one in non-conference strength of schedule, 24 in strength of schedule overall, and they run away with the Valley title. And honestly, even if they don't run away with the Valley title, but like they're probably going to, that team's going to host. They're going to be rewarded for all of that, because it's just going to be like, well, what else did you want them to do? You know, sorry that they only went 2-9 against top 50 teams or whatever it ends up being, but like they're going to have done everything else that the committee asks teams to do. And I think it's great if that does end up happening. Right now, the area like around Southern Indiana and into Kentucky is overrepresented with hosts, because you know Kentucky and IU and Indiana State are all in the mix right now. But as a Midwesterner, you love to see it, and you know I'm very intrigued by where the Sycamores go the rest of the season. But you know I don't know how well they'll do in a regional. Obviously, that didn't go great for Georgia Southern last year. Who knows? But I just think it's great that we're talking about Indiana State this way, and that a program like that is able to, break out. It's been a good, solid program for years, but this is the kind of breakout season that you love to see for a mid-major like that.
Yeah, and like you said, the fact that we're even talking about it, and I know as a coaching staff, they're not going to hang their hat on, hey, we were talked about on April 26th as a regional host, but it is a testament to how good Indiana State is and how great of a job that staff's done. And to your point, that regional, if it shook out as Indiana State, ASU, Notre Dame, and Central Michigan, that is a pretty, pretty tough draw.
Yeah, so you wanted to host a regional, did you?
I was going to say, you probably get one of the last teams left out of a regional hosting spot, a really solid Notre Dame team, and then the class of the MAC. So, and that's an Arizona State team that can really swing it. So no matter who they end up hosting or no matter who they end up going to, it's going to be a pretty loaded regional, because I figure if they don't host, they're going to be one of the more difficult 2 or 3 seeds that a team can draw in the country, I think. So no matter what, wherever the Sycamores are, it is going to be a pretty, pretty difficult regional.
Let's make sure they play Stanford. Let's match up the trees. That's what I want. Make that happen, selection committee, or just Mitch Hanna's, David Esker. Like let's get a midweek or a weekend series next year. Let's get the trees matched up against each other. That's where I'm at right now. And that means that we've talked for enough time on this edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. Make sure you're subscribed to the Baseball America podcast we'll come at you once a week. We'll be back here again next week talking more college baseball. I'll have more tree talk, maybe. Who knows? So hit that subscribe or follow button on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Peter is at Peter G. Flaherty. And all the writing is over at baseballamerica.com. That's where you can see that latest edition of the projected field of 64, and where later in the week, Peter will get you ready for the weekend with your weekend preview. So make sure you head over to the website to check that all out as well. For Peter, I'm Teddy. We'll talk to you next time.